Wendy had been standing at the window, waiting and watching, as she had once waited and watched for her husband, hoping Jack would come home in a good mood and sober. She rushed down the stairs and opened the door just as Dick was about to ring the bell marked Torrance 2A. He held out his arms and she went into them at once, wishing she could be enfolded there for at least an hour, maybe even two. He let go and held her at arm's length by her shoulders. "You're looking fine, Wendy. How's the little man? He talking again?" "No, but he'll talk to you. Even if he won't do it out loud to start with, you can..." Instead of finishing, she made a finger gun and pointed it at his forehead. "Not necessarily," Dick said. His smile revealed a bright new pair of false teeth. The Overlook had taken most of the last set on the night the boiler blew. Jack Torrance swung the mallet that took Dick's dentures and Wendy's ability to walk without a slight hitch in her stride, but they both understood it had really been the Overlook. "He's very powerful, Wendy. If he wants to block me out, he will. I know from my own experience. Besides, it'd be better if we talk with our mouths. Better for him. Now tell me everything that happened." After she did that, Wendy took him into the bathroom. She had left the stains for him to see, like a beat cop preserving the scene of a crime for the forensic team. And there had been a crime, one against her son. Dick looked for a long time, not touching, then nodded. "Let's see if Danny's up and in the doings." He wasn't, but Wendy's heart was lightened by the look of gladness that came into Danny's face when he saw who was sitting beside him on the bed and shaking his shoulder. "Hey, Danny, I brought you a present."
"It's not my birthday."
Wendy watched them, knowing they were speaking, but not what it was about. Dick said, "You get up, honey. We're going to take a walk on the beach."
"Dick, she came back. Mrs. Massey from room 217 came back."
Dick gave his shoulder another shake. "Talk out loud, Dan. You're scaring your ma."
Danny said, "What's my present?"
Dick smiled. "That's better. I like to hear you, and Wendy does, too." "Yes," it was all she dared say. Otherwise, they'd hear the tremble in her voice and be concerned. She didn't want that. This wasn't about her. "While we're gone, you might want to give the bathroom a cleaning," Dick said to her. "Have you got kitchen gloves?" She nodded. "Good. Wear them." The beach was 2 miles away. The parking lot was surrounded by tawdry beachfront attractions, funnel cake concessions, souvenir shops, a shooting gallery. But this was the tag end of the season, and none were doing much business. They had the beach itself almost entirely to themselves. On the ride from the apartment, Danny held his present, an oblong package, quite heavy, wrapped in silver paper, in his lap. "You can open it when we get back," Dick said. They walked just above the waves, where the sand was hard and gleaming. Danny walked slowly because Dick was pretty old. Someday he'd die, maybe even soon. "I'm good to go another few years," Dick said. "Don't you worry about that. Now tell me what happened last night. Don't leave anything out." It didn't take long. The hard part would have been finding words to explain the terror he now felt, and how it was mingled with a suffocating sense of certainty. Now that she'd found him, she'd never leave. But because it was Dick, he didn't need words.
"She'll come back. I know she will. She'll come back and come back until she gets me."
"Do you remember when we met?" Although surprised at the change of direction, Danny nodded. It had been Halloran who'd given him and his parents the guided tour on their first day at the Overlook. Very long ago, that seemed. "And do you remember the first time I spoke up inside your head?"
"I sure do."
"What did I say?"
"You asked me if I wanted to go to Florida with you."
"That's right. And how did it make you feel to know you wasn't alone anymore, that you weren't the only one?"
"It was great," Danny said. "It was so great."
"Yeah," Halloran said. "Yeah, course it was." They walked in silence for a bit. Little birds, peeps, Danny's mother called them, ran in and out of the waves.
"Did it ever strike you funny how I showed up when you needed me?"
He looked down at Danny and smiled. No, it didn't. Why would it? You was just a child, but you're a little older now. A lot older in some ways. Listen to me, Danny. The world has a way of keeping things in balance. I believe that. There's a saying, when the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear. I was your teacher. You are a lot more than that, Danny said. He took Dick's hand. You saved us, and you were my friend. Dick ignored this, or seemed to. My grandma also had the shining. Do you remember me telling you that? Yeah, you said you and her could have long conversations without even opening your mouths. That's right. She taught me, and it was her great-grandma that taught her, way back in the slave days. Someday, Danny, it will be your turn to be the teacher. The pupil will come. If Mrs. Massey doesn't get me first, Danny said morosely. They came to a bench. Dick sat down. Don't dare go any further. I might not be able to make it back. Sit beside me. I want to tell you a story. I don't want stories, Danny said. She'll come back. Don't you get it? She'll come back and come back and come back. Shut your mouth and open your ears. Take some instruction. Then Dick grinned, displaying his gleaming new dentures. I think you'll get the point. You're far from stupid, honey. His mother's mother, the one with the shining, lived in Clearwater. She was the white grandma. Not for her skin, of course, or even for the color of her hair, but because she was good. His father's father lived in Dumbrie, Mississippi, a rural community not far from Oxford. His wife had died long before Dick was born. For a man of color, in that place and time, he was wealthy. He owned a funeral parlor. Dick and his parents visited 4 times a year, and young Dick Halloran hated those visits. He was terrified of Andy Halloran, and called him, only in his own mind, to speak it aloud would have earned him a smack across the chops. The Black Grandpa. "You know about kiddie fiddlers?" Dick asked Danny. "Guys who want children for sex?" "Sort of," Danny said cautiously. Certainly he knew not to talk to strangers and never to get into a car with one, because they might do stuff to you. Well, old Andy was more than a kiddie fiddler. He was a damn sadist as well. What's that? Someone who enjoys giving pain. Danny nodded in immediate understanding. Like Frankie Lestrone at school. He gives kids Indian burns and Dutch rubs. If he can't make you cry, he stops. If he can, he never stops. This was different. This was worse. Dick lapsed into what would have looked like silence to a passerby, but the story went forward in a series of pictures and connecting phrases. Danny saw the Black Grandpa, a tall man in a suit as black as he was, who wore a special kind of fedora, hat on his head. He saw how there were always little buds of spittle at the corners of his mouth, and how his eyes were red-rimmed, like he was tired or had just gotten over crying. He saw how he would take Dick, younger than Danny was now, probably the same age he'd been that winter at the Overlook, on his lap. If they weren't alone, he might only tickle. If they were, he'd put his hand between Dick's legs and squeeze his balls until Dick thought he'd faint with the pain. "Do you like that?" Black Grandpa Andy would pant in his ear. He smelled of cigarettes and whiskey. "'Course you do. Every boy likes that. But even if you don't, you dasn't tell. If you do, I'll hurt you. I'll burn you.' "'Holy shit,' Danny said. "'That's gross.' "'There were other things, too,' Dick said. "'But I'll just tell you one. Grampy hired a woman to help out around the house after his wife died. She cleaned and cooked. At dinner time, she'd put everything on the table at once, from salad to dessert, because that's the way old Black Grandpa liked it. Dessert was always cake or pudding. It was put down on a little plate or in a little dish next to your dinner plate so you could look at it and want it while you plowed through the other muck. Grandpa's hard and fast rule was you could look at dessert, but you couldn't eat dessert unless you'd finished every bit of fried meat and boiled greens and mashed potatoes. You even had to clean up the gravy,
which was lumpy and didn't have much taste. If it wasn't all gone, Black Grandpa'd hand me a hunk of bread and say, "Sopper up with that, Dickie Bird. Make that plate shine like the dog licked it." That's what he called me, Dickie Bird. Sometimes I couldn't finish no matter what, and then I didn't get the cake or the pudding. He'd take it and eat it himself. And sometimes, when I could finish all my dinner, I'd find he'd smashed a cigarette butt in my piece of cake or my pudding. He could do that because he always sat next to me. He'd make like it was a big joke. "Whoops, missed the ashtray," he'd say. My Ma and Pa never put a stop to it, although they must have known that even if it was a joke, it wasn't a fair one to play on a child. They just made out like it was a joke, too. "That's really bad," Danny said. "Your folks should have stood up for you. My mom does. My daddy would, too." They were scared of him, and they were right to be scared. Andy Halloran was a bad, bad motorcycle. He'd say, "Go on, Dickie. Eat around it. That won't poison you." If I took a bite, he'd have Nonnie, that was the housekeeper's name, bring me a fresh dessert. If I wouldn't, it just sat there. It got so I could never finish my meal because my stomach would get all upset. "You should have moved your cake or pudding to the other side of your plate," Danny said. Sure, I tried that. He'd just move it back, saying dessert went on the right. Dick paused, looking out at the water where a long white boat was trundling slowly across the dividing line between the sky and the Gulf of Mexico. Sometimes, when he got me alone, he bit me. And once, when I said I'd tell my Pa if he didn't leave me alone, he put a cigarette out on my bare foot. He said, "Tell him that, too, and see what good it does you. Your daddy knows my ways already, and he'll never say a word, because he yella, and because he want the money I got in the bank when I die, which I ain't fixin' to do soon." Danny listened in wide-eyed fascination. He had always thought the story of Bluebeard was the scariest of all time, the scariest there could ever be, but this one was worse, a lot, because it was true. Sometimes he said he knew a tribe of bad gypsies, and if I didn't do what he wanted, he'd call them on the long distance, and they'd come and steal my breath until I was dead. Then he'd give me 1,000. That's what he called it when he put his hand between my legs. "And you ain't gonna say a thing, Dickie Bird. If you do, the gypsies will come, and after they steal your breath, you'll go to hell, and your body will burn forever, because you peached. It don't matter if anybody believes you or not. Peaching is peaching." For a long time, I believed the old bastard. I didn't even tell my white grandma, the one with the shining, because I was afraid she'd think it was my fault. If I'd been older, I would have known better, but I was just a kid. He paused. There was something else, too. "Do you know what it was, Danny?" Danny looked into Dick's face for a long time, probing the thoughts and images behind his forehead. At last he said, "You wanted your father to get the money, but he never did." "No. Black Grandpa left it all to a home for Negro orphans in Alabama, and I bet I know why, too, but that's neither here nor there."
"And your white grandma never knew? She never guessed?"
"She knew there was something, but I kept it blocked away, and she left me alone about it. Just told me that when I was ready to talk, she was ready to listen." Danny, when Andy Halloran died, it was a stroke. I was the happiest boy on earth. My Ma said I didn't have to go to the funeral, that I could stay with Grandma Rose if I wanted to, but I wanted to go. You bet I did. I wanted to make sure old Black Grandpa was really dead. It rained that day. Everybody stood around the grave under black umbrellas. I watched his coffin, the biggest and best one in his shop, I have no doubt, go into the ground, and I thought about all the times he twisted my balls and all the cigarette butts in my cake and the one he put out on my foot and how he ruled the dinner table like the crazy old king in that Shakespeare play. But most of all, I thought about the gypsy tribe, which he had no doubt made up out of whole cloth, and how he could never call them on the long distance to come in the night and steal my breath until I was dead.
I peeped over the edge of the grave. "Let the boys see," my pa said when my ma tried to pull me back. And I scoped the coffin down there in that wet hole, and I thought, "Down there, you're 6 feet closer to hell, Black Grandpa, and pretty soon you'll be all away, and I hope the devil gives you 1,000 with a hand that's on fire."
Dick reached into his pants pocket and brought out a pack of Marlboros with a book of matches tucked under the cellophane. He put the cigarette in his mouth and then had to chase it with the match because his hand was trembling and his lips were trembling, too. Danny was astounded to see tears standing in Dick's eyes. Now, knowing where this story was headed, Danny asked, "When did he come back?" Dick dragged deep on his cigarette and exhaled smoke through a smile.
"You didn't need to peek inside my head to get that, did you?"
"Nope."
6 months later, I came home from school one day and he was laying naked on my bed with this half-rotted prick all reared up. He said, "You come on and sit on this, Dickie Bird. You give me 1,000, and I'll give you 2,000.
I screamed, but there was no one there to hear it. My ma and pa, they were both working, my ma in a restaurant and my dad at a printing press. I ran out and slammed the door, and I heard Black Grandpa get up, thump, and cross the room, thump, thump, thump. And what I heard next?
"Fingernails," Danny said in a voice that was hardly there.
"Scratching on the door."
"That's right. I didn't go in again until that night when my ma and pa were both home. He was gone, but there were leavings."
"Sure, like in our bathroom, because he was going bad."
"That's right. I changed the bed myself, which I could do because my ma showed me how 2 years before. She said I was too old to need a housekeeper anymore, that housekeepers were for little white boys and girls like the one she took care of before she got her hostessing job at Barclay's Steakhouse. About a week later, I see old Black Grandpa in the park, a-settin' in a swing. He had his suit on, but it was all covered with gray stuff, the mold that was growing on it down in his coffin, I think."
"Yeah," Danny said. He spoke in a glassy whisper. It was all he could manage.
"His fly was open, though, and his work sticking out. I'm sorry to tell you all this, Danny. You're too young to hear about such things, but you need to know."
"Did you go to the White Grandma then?"
"Had to, because I knew what you know. He'd just keep coming back. Not like..."
"Danny, have you ever seen dead people? Regular dead people, I mean?"
He laughed because that sounded funny. It did to Danny, too.
"Ghosts." "A few times," Danny said. "Once, there were three of them standing around a railroad crossing. Two boys and a girl, teenagers. I think maybe they got killed there."
Dick nodded. "Yeah, probably. Mostly they stick close to where they died. Some of the folks you saw in the Overlook were like that."
"I know. The relief in being able to talk about these things to someone who knew was indescribable. And this one time, there was a woman in a restaurant, the kind, you know, where they have tables outside?"
Dick nodded again.
"I couldn't see through that one, but no one else saw her, and when a waitress pushed in the chair she was sitting in, the ghost lady disappeared. Do you see them sometimes?"
"Not for years," Dick said, "but you're stronger in the shining than I was. It goes back some as you get older."
"Good," Danny said fervently.
"But you'll have plenty left, even when you're grown up, I think, because you started with so much. Regular ghosts aren't like the woman you saw in room 217 and again in your bathroom. That's right, isn't it?"
"Yes," Danny said. "She's real. She leaves pieces of herself. You saw them. So did Mom. And she doesn't shine."
"Let's walk back," Dick said. "It's time you saw what I brought you."
The return to the parking lot was even slower because Dick was winded.
"Cigarettes," he said. "Don't ever start, Danny."
"Mom smokes," Danny said. "She doesn't think I know, but I do. Dick, what did your white grandma do? She must have done something because your black grandpa never got you."
"She gave me a present, same as I'm going to give you. That's what a teacher does when the pupil is ready. Learning itself is a present, you know. The best one anybody can give or get." She wouldn't call Grandpa Andy by his name. She just called him, Dick grinned, the prevert. I said what you said, that he wasn't a ghost, he was real. And she said yes, that was true, because I was making him real, with the shining. She said that some spirits, angry spirits mostly, won't go on from this world because they know what's waiting for them is even worse. Most eventually starve away to nothing, but some of them find food. That's what the shining is to them, Dick, she told me. Food. You're feeding that prevert. You don't mean to, but you are. He's like a mosquito who'll keep circling and then landing for more blood. Can't do nothing about that. What you can do is turn what he came for against him. They were back at the Cadillac. Dick unlocked the doors, then slid behind the steering wheel with a sigh of relief. Once upon a time, I could have walked 10 miles and run another 5. Nowadays, a little walk down the beach and my back feels like a hoss kicked it. Go on, Danny. Open your present. Danny stripped off the silver paper and discovered a box made of green-painted metal. On the front, below the latch, was a little keypad. Hey! Neat! Yeah, good. I got it at the Western Auto. Pure American steel. The one white Grandma Rose gave me had a padlock with a little key I wore around my neck, but that was long ago. This is the 1980s, the modern age. See the number pad? What you do is put in 5 numbers you're sure you won't forget, then push the little button that says set. Then, anytime you want to open the box, you punch your code. Danny was delighted. Thanks, Dick. I'll keep my special things in it. These would include his best baseball cards, his Cub Scouts compass badge, his lucky green rock, and a picture of him and his father taken on the front lawn of the apartment building where they'd lived in Boulder before the Overlook, just before things turned bad. That's fine, Danny. I want you to do that, but I want you to do something else.
What?
I want you to know this box. Inside and out. Don't just look at it. Touch it. Feel it all over. Then stick your nose inside and see if there's a smell. It needs to be your closest friend, at least for a while.
Why?
Because you're going to put another one just like it in your mind. One that's even more special. And the next time that bitch comes around, you'll be ready for her. I'll tell you how, just like old white Grandma told me. Danny didn't talk much on the ride back to the apartment. He had a lot to think about. He held his present, a lockbox made of strong metal, on his lap. Mrs. Massey returned a week later. She was in the bathroom again, this time in the tub. Danny wasn't surprised. It was where she had died, after all. This time, he didn't run. This time, he went inside and closed the door. She beckoned him forward, smiling. Danny came, also smiling. In the other room, he could hear the television. His mother was watching Three's Company.
Hello, Mrs. Massey, Danny said. I brought you something.
At the last moment, she understood and began to scream. Moments later, his mom was knocking at the bathroom door. Danny, are you all right?
Fine, Mom.
The tub was empty. There was some goo in it, but Danny thought he could clean that up. A little water would send it right down the drain.
Do you have to go? I'll be out pretty soon.
No, I just thought I heard you call. Danny grabbed his toothbrush and opened the door.
I'm 100% cool. See?
He gave her a big smile. It wasn't hard now that Mrs. Massey was gone. The troubled look left her face.
Good. Make sure you brush the back ones. That's where the food goes to hide.
I will, Mom. From inside his head, far inside, where the twin of his special lockbox was stored on a special shelf, Danny could hear muffled screaming. He didn't mind. He thought it would stop soon enough. And he was right. 2 years later, on the day before the Thanksgiving break, halfway up a deserted stairwell in Alafaya Elementary, Horace Derwent appeared to Danny Torrance. There was confetti on the shoulders of his suit. A little black mask hung from one decaying hand. He reeked of the grave. "Great party, isn't it?" he asked.
Danny turned and walked away very quickly. When school was over, he called Dick long distance at the restaurant where Dick worked in Key West. "Another one of the Overlook people found me. How many boxes can I have, Dick? In my head, I mean."
Dick chuckled. "As many as you need, honey. That's the beauty of The Shining. You think my black grandpa's the only one I ever had to lock away?
Do they die in there? Like, run out of air?"
But that was stupid. The Overlook people didn't need to breathe.
This time there was no chuckle. This time there was a coldness in Dick's voice the boy had never heard before. Danny didn't mind.
"Do you care?"
Danny didn't. When the one-time owner of the Overlook showed up again, shortly after New Year's, this time in Danny's bedroom closet, Danny was ready. He went into the closet and closed the door. Shortly afterward, a second mental lockbox went up on the high mental shelf beside the one that held Mrs. Massey. There was more pounding and some inventive cursing which Danny saved for his own later use. Pretty soon it stopped. There was silence from the Derwent lockbox, as well as the Massey lockbox. Whether or not they were alive, in their undead fashion, no longer mattered. What mattered was they were never getting out. He was safe. That was what he thought then. Of course, he also thought he would never take a drink, not after seeing what it had done to his father. Sometimes we just get it wrong.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.